This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to talk some Blues hockey. Welcome to the Blues NHL podcast, hosted by former Blues defenseman Jamie Rivers and former Blues enforcer Darren Kimball.
And we got a problem in front of the Hawk bench. Kimball pulling at Roenick. Here's Kimball swinging at Roenick wildly, and the linesman trying to get in between them.
Federico stole it from Reinhardt, breaking in to Hunter. Hunter shooting, rebound.
Chevalier, he'll be thrown out of the game. Curtis Joseph grabs Chevalier, and the two goalies go at it head to head. And Joseph with three great rights.
Turgeon Hall looking for 500. He shoots. He scores. Brett Hall, number 500.
Oh, unbelievable save by Jake Allen.
Tarasenko in the clear. He scores.
And now, here's your off-ice official, Jim Cromer.
What's up, St. Louis? Back in the studio here, my good buddy. I'm going to start calling you Megamind. You know that? I watched that there, like, weekend or whatever, my littlest one, and I saw the character, and I said, you know what? That reminds me of Darren Kimball. He's got so much great information inside that huge cranium that I think Megamind is a positive thing.
That could work. Is it this thing gets rocking, it goes, boy.
I tell you what, there's not like one hamster in the wheel of it. First of all, the wheel's like the size of a Ferris wheel.
So what do you think I got in there? A groundhog that can run around? A raccoon size?
Yo, maybe a bull mastiff running in there.
Oh, we're going really big here now.
Anyways, buddy, hey, welcome in today. Good to have you. Good to see you. Good to just be you and I in here in the cockpit today, huh?
What, it's when you get in here and Chrome's in here, oh boy, am I just spark right up.
I came in, my feet were barely touching the ground. I was so excited, eh? Poor Chrome's, he probably had one too many wine coolers there last night, and he's got a little bit of a sugar hangover, can't handle it.
Wine coolers.
Did you see that story last week? Or the Twitter thing that went on last week?
No, what was that?
We had a guy on here, Jim Stout. That's his name on Twitter. Hopefully it's his real name.
Yeah.
And him and Chrome's were going at it about something to do with the maroon thing, or I don't know exactly. And Cromer was like getting kind of heated. You know how Jim gets heated, right? Yeah. And so I chimed in, and I was actually chiming in on behalf of Jim Stout, saying, hey, leave Jim alone is what I wrote. Yep. I said he had one too many wine coolers last night, and he's a little hungover today. Well, Jim Stout thought I was talking about him because Jim, right? And yep. Of course, my brain, it didn't register right, because I just call him Cromer. I don't call him Jim ever.
Yep.
So then Cromer chimes in with a tweet saying, yeah, he probably drinks Zima like back in the 90s. And then, you know, then they kind of go by and I chime in. I'm like, well, wait a minute. I'm not talking about him, Cromer. I'm talking about you. So that put an end to that pretty quickly. All of a sudden, he disappeared. And he was making nice with everybody.
Yeah. I tell you what, the two birds and the bat one that he does here, he's pretty intense on his little firebacks here lately. He's getting fired up, so I don't know if things are going in his direction or, but he's been a little on the antsy side lately, Mr. Cromer has.
Yeah, he's getting heated up there. Yeah. He's like that little character in that cartoon where his little head blows up with flames and fire there. I love watching it happen, but I can almost see it when I'm reading the Twitter things. You just see the little head just blowing up, you know? So, anyways, hopefully he's doing well. Hopefully his daughter is supposed to go to the doctor today. Yeah. So hopefully that's all just a checkup and whatnot.
For sure.
But we will enjoy the time without him.
Yes, we will.
So since our last discussion, the Blues have done, well, a couple of things, but mainly they signed the big rig.
Yeah.
Patty Maroon coming home, Kimby. Thoughts?
I like this signing. We've talked about it before. I think we were talking about this last year at the trading deadline, about how him coming back to St. Louis, the story with this kid and that feature that went on. And it was, it just makes you like you're the St. Louis city. There's the hometown kid comes back, which is this place is St. Louis where that should happen because of the tight, you know, knit group that they got here. So, but he brings something to the table, and it's, you know, he brings size to the table. He's and it's a funny thing because way back when, we're going to go back 20-some years ago when I was coaching a junior team, we were up in Wisconsin, and he come on the trip with us, and so he was like 16-year-old kid maybe at the time, but he was like as big as he is now.
Big dude, yeah.
But so I seen, you know, I always looked at him, and he wasn't in shape at that time. His feet, you know, weren't moving like they're moving like mine in the hockey world, slow, you know. So, but his hands and the vision of the ice was phenomenal at that age. So you knew that he had the thing in the hands. And he played a couple games, and I think we played two games, and he had like 4 points up there in Wisconsin when we played. And then he went on, and he ends up going back to Triple. He might go to Triple A Blues, and I think at that point in time. But you could see the potential that he had, and then he got himself into shape. He got going through that process, but he's played with the best players in the world, and so you're going to be able to anywhere up and down that line, you can go with him, and so that's huge, and it's a local boy, so it's of all the signs, like I like this sign. This was a big one for Army, I think, to get him to get in here, and the kid, obviously from what you hear, he took a pay cut, not a pay cut, but he took less money. I'll say not a pay cut, took less money, so that shows that he wanted to be here. And so that'll be interesting. I think that's a good thing for St. Louis.
All right, well, bear with me here, okay? Because I might get long-winded on this one.
Okay.
Because just listening to you talk and gathering my own thoughts, I have a lot to say about this. And the number one thing I want to say is what you just mentioned, is he wanted to come back here. He wanted to come to St. Louis. And now this has been a topic in here, but certainly in the rest of the media as well, is certain guys say, oh, they don't want to go to St. Louis, or they've rejected this and that and the other. And you and I kind of went off on that the last episode, how ridiculous that is.
Yep.
And we commended David Perron, like his contract or not, think he's worth it or not, I don't care. He wanted to come back to St. Louis for a third time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one guy. Now you've got Bozek, who wanted to come here. Now you got Big Rig, Patty Maroon,
mm-hmm.
who, yes, he left money on the table.
For sure.
How much, we don't know, but any money is substantial. If it's $100,000, $1 million, $2 million, I don't know. That's real money. That's guaranteed money for him and his family and the rest of his life that he left on the table because two things. He wanted to be at home with his son and the rest of his family, and he wanted to play for the St. Louis Blues
mm-hmm.
because he felt like this was a team that can compete not just now, but in the next handful of years for a championship.
Yep.
And he liked what Doug Armstrong had done in the offseason. So it's huge on so many levels. And then you go back to Patty as a younger kid. Well, yeah, he was big. Mm-hmm. And people talk about, you know, maybe the foot speed and things like that. But when you're that big at such a young age, it's difficult. I've got one mm-hmm. at home. You know, he's a big kid. And it's that baby giraffe almost. And it's not that he's out of shape. It's harder. These kids are bigger. Their feet are big. The legs are heavy. Like all these things, it takes a while to figure out how to deal with that. And maturity wise, it takes a little bit of time to figure out that you have to work twice as hard when you're a big guy. And Patty Maroon started working, gosh, right before he went to Anaheim, he really dedicated himself to the game of hockey and to himself. And obviously we saw the results. He went on to Anaheim, and that's where he got himself a career going.
Correct.
Played with some great players, but then ended up playing with Getzlaff and Perry. Well, isn't that amazing that a guy who's slow and can't get there, but boy, he can play with those guys. Right? Now, fast forward to the Edmonton Oilers.
Mm-hmm.
The fastest player in the game, Connor McDavid, and Patty Maroon can play with him. You and I both know that if you can't skate, if you can't keep up, if you can't get there, if you don't know how to get there, you can't play with that guy. Because he'll be towing you the whole game. Patty found a way to do it. So, you know what? The fact that he's so big sometimes is an optical illusion of him moving maybe a little slower.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets from A to B as quick as he needs to. He gets to that net front and battles. And his hands, like you said, are incredible.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of that is attributed to the roller hockey. You talk to Patty and his family and his friends and everybody who know him growing up. Man, he was a great roller hockey player, and he got those sick hands by playing roller hockey.
Yeah.
Well, he's still got those, obviously.
For sure.
So this is a guy that's going to be dangerous, and he does. He works. He can play up and down the lineup. You want him first line, he can go there. Second, third, fourth line, you want to create some energy and you want to bang some bodies, he's there. And he just talked about that in one of his little interviews here. He said, wherever they put me, I'm comfortable playing that role. We haven't had a guy like that. Like, we talk about Backes or Brower, maybe, okay? We can, but I even think that, you know, Patty brings a different dimension there because I think he's tougher.
Yeah.
Meaning that I know the game doesn't have the fighting like it used to and this and that and the other. However, if you got a guy who's just as tough or close to some of the toughest guys in the league, but he's putting in 20, 25 goals a year, it makes him extremely dangerous because then when he turns and says he wants to go, you can't say, oh, it's not worth my time.
Yeah.
You're like, holy crap, I bet I'm stuck here now because this guy's one of the better players and he's turning, he wants to cave the side of my face in right now.
Yeah. If you understand where I'm going, he's like if you look at a Rick Tocchet that played the game or a Wendell, and I'm not putting him in those, don't get me wrong here, but understand, he's going to play the minutes they're playing. And if you're going to screw around, he can, like you just said, he can walk to the table and say, okay, I play. It's not like I'm going to go sit on the bench for another period. I'm here and I'm going to come back and I'm going to come back. So there's a threat there for that. And this is sort of crazy. If you listen to what I'm going to say here, the best player arguably ever to play the game of hockey was Wayne Gretzky. And I believe that. But he wasn't he didn't look like he was the fastest guy, but what made him fast was he was thinking five or six or seven game, you know, way beyond. So for Patty to play with McDavid, get these guys there, obviously, if his speed's going to come into jeopardy, obviously he's a very intelligent person because he's got to get up there to that point. You have to make yourself available to the situation. So if you have to cheat that extra second to get there or whatever, he understands that. He understands the spots. When you're playing with anyone, when you're playing with a defense partner, is the same thing. You knew where he was going to be at all times, so you could adjust your game to that guy. So I know where he's going to go. So, and that's what Patty would do. He said, okay, Connor McDavid's going to get it. Probably 95 or 99% of the time he's going to have that puck. I just got to get open for that 1 second, and that's all he wants me to do, or get to that corner where he wants. So he's obviously got the intelligence for the players he's worked with. So like you said, up and down the lineup, anywhere you want this guy to go. And now he can stick up for anyone that wants to screw around on those top two or three lines. You can just plug him right there.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing that comes to mind quickly when I think about some of this that we're discussing is, obviously, like you said, he thinks the game so well. He's such a smart hockey player that it allots him those opportunities offensively, playing with some of those guys who are elite.
Yep.
The flip side of that is Connor McDavid, when he got hurt his first year, was it that Manning kid?
Yep.
In Philadelphia?
Yep.
Well, the next time Philly went to Edmonton,
correct,
guess what? That guy had to answer the bell. And guess who it was? Patty Maroon. He laid a beating on him, too. And everybody thought, well, Lucic is going to grab him and this and that, which Lucic, not that he wouldn't have.
For sure.
But Patty recognized, and that's a form of intelligence, recognizing that there's a situation that's in front of you that you can take care of and that you should. That's intelligence. Just as much as hockey sense, that's one.
And that there goes to show you the type of team player that he's going to be too, because he's going to go to that point to help out his teammate. And that's, you know what, I've always told people, even when I play with these kids at a 14-year that I'm coaching, 90% of this game is, at least 90% of it is probably mental. The physical, they're all equal physically, basically, when you get to this. Some guys got more talents, yes, of course, but 90% of it is physical-wise, but now, mentally, the 90%. So Patty understands all this stuff. He's been around. It's not like a raw kid coming in to do. He's there. He's here, and he's bringing it home now.
Yeah, he's a 30-year-old veteran now. He's been around. He's played, like we talked about, played with some of the best players in the world, and arguably Connor McDavid, who's going to be a generational superstar. Yeah. So,
and just you think about it, because we know, so Cam, who's in town and does all this, you know, he was a local boy that got to wear the blue note, which would be just, you know, he's on cloud nine for that. And Patty gets to come in here, coming in the same, they must be in the same age limit around there. They played hockey around the same time, I believe.
Didn't
they?
Cam's a little older,
but some same circles they run in. They're friends and that.
Yeah, but very good friends.
You know, so here comes Patty in here. So it's just, for the rest of his life, he harbors here and he's wore the note. And, you know, two people in the city of St. Louis get to say that. Local boys.
I think people are going to love him.
Yeah, I do too.
I really do. You know, he signed a team-friendly contract, if we're going to get technical now, okay? Yeah. He left the Blues, some meat on the bone, to go sign Edmondson, which we'll get into in a couple minutes, which is going to be huge for the Blues. But people are going to look at that and say, this guy took less for various reasons, and we know the obvious ones, but he also took less in order to give the Blues a little bit of wiggle room here to put together, to keep Edmondson, to put the right team on the ice. So it speaks volumes.
Yeah,
but what kind of a guy he is. And if the fans don't love him for the way he plays, the way he scores goals, if they don't love him for his physicality, God damn it, at least love him for the fact that he sacrificed for his own city and for the Blue Note and for those guys to be successful this year.
Yeah, and you, like you said, everything he's done, everything right. It's, you know, it's he's come home. It's just made. It's made for it. So, and the fans are gonna like him because he's gonna get his nose.
They're gonna love him.
Yeah, he's gonna get his nose dirty. He's gonna score some big goals for him. You look at on the power play. I'm sure he's gonna eventually find at some point in time this year he'll find himself in front of that net. Manning.
Well, he better be there.
Yeah, that's where he'll eventually go. Exactly.
The old number seven too. Hey, yeah. Can we talk about that? Yeah, First of all, I thought number seven was untouchable now because we had Red Berenson.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a couple others I forget, but I know Red Berenson, Kachuk.
Cliffy Ronning.
It's a good thing Cliffy Ronning didn't wear number seven before maroon,
I wonder if it's the same shirt size.
Well, that's the thing. I was like, we had to find somebody that can wear that number seven from Big Walt. So now we got the big rig, there Patty Maroon. We had Big Walt before. Now we got the big rig.
I wonder if he'll have to take it in on the sides.
Oh, Jesus. But it's great, right? He's going back to the number seven, yep. St. Louis Bandits number. A lot to be excited about. Now, as we shift gears, what do you think this does for the Blues ultimately? Like, I know everybody on paper at this time of year, everybody's a contender, but not everybody has made the moves that the Blues have made. Like, you look at the Devils, they've missed out on a bunch of things.
For sure.
The Islanders have missed out. The Blackhawks have done next to nothing.
Nothing.
Right? So where does this, in your mind, where does this position the Blues in the Central Division and then ultimately, like, overall?
Well, you're still gonna deal with Nashville. You're still, you know, here's where I was thinking about this last night because when we were coming on, I was thinking, you know, whereabouts this was going to fall. I don't believe they're a top five team. I don't believe it's talent wise they're a top five team. I don't think they can touch with Tampa. They can't touch Toronto. There's a Nashville still. You got that defense that's sitting there. You know, fabulous. I think Vegas has made some nice moves, and they're going to be strong again.
And they still got cap space,
yeah, and you got San Jose out there doing some stuff, and you know. So, I think if everything goes well, I think they can get in the top 10. But here's what I was thinking though too, Riz. So you've put this on the table. And now, can Schwartz stay healthy all year long? Can Fabry stay healthy all year long? You know, if Steen stays here, if that's what he's going to do, what kind of year is he going to have? Is he going to pick up on this and you know, he needs to have a better season if they're going to get ahead of the game.
Well, there are a lot of ifs.
And people can stop this nonsense about Thomas playing the fourth line here, too. Because I'll tell you, my belief is, and I was talking to a guy the other night at the rink. They talked about Thomas. I said, you know what? Back in when I played, I said they could, because he goes about Dougie Gilmore, and Dougie Gilmore is a different player because he's a rough little son of a bitch and everything.
Yeah, that's a different
person. I told the person, you know what, Dougie Gilmore could play back in the day because there would be a Tony Twist and a Darren Kimball on the side of him, and Dougie Gilmore could pretty well go around and do whatever the hell he wanted, and I'm not bragging on nothing. I'm just saying that's the way
you're right.
And then they would find him to get on they could stick him up on the power play, but that's not what it is anymore. They're going to develop this kid, so if he can't pitch your top three, which I think I hope he does. I want the kid to stay here. But if he doesn't, then that's now they got their own farm team. So now they can develop the kid the right way. It's not you're not going to bring that kid up here and give him 5 minutes a game. It ain't going to happen.
No, you saw it. I think you saw it last year with the Tage Thompson experiment, right?
Yeah.
Like, and you know, he kind of left here whether he was bitter or not about the whole thing. It's irrelevant at this point. But what happened was you had a guy who was a scorer, a talent, you know, all that, and you were forced to play him on like a fourth line or at least fourth line minutes.
Yeah.
And it didn't help him. Ultimately, it didn't help him. And so as I look at the lineup, you wonder, where does Thomas fit in? Well, guess what? Let him figure that out.
Yeah.
Like with his play. Like, this is a great situation to be in. And when you're a general manager or a head coach or an organization, you're looking at your lineup and you're like, wow, this is tough. I don't know who slots where. Guess what? That's a dream come true. Now, players hate it.
Yeah.
Because you and I both know at that point, it's like, okay, the heat's on from day one. Mm-hmm. There's no putting your toe in the deep end here. You're jumping in head first because you have to, or you may lose your spot. Boom, just like that, because player X has outplayed you in the first 2 days of training camp or the first two games of preseason.
Yeah.
So
I'll be honest with you, Ribs. When I look at this and all they've done, and of all the things, the prawn thing I'm not excited about, but everything else that Army's done here, I'm right on board. I think he's done a fabulous job from where it was to where it is now. I think he's gone somewhere. I'm more excited, and this might sound goofy, but not this year. I think next year the Blues are going to be – I think the Blues are going to – because you're going to have Kyrou that's going to have a full year. Costin's going to have another second year to hopefully break this thing if he doesn't this year. Thomas is going to have a full year under his belt. So there's three kids with a high potential coming into this ball game with the guys they've already got. And then there's some guys that Yaskin's going to have to play for his life to get another contract out of this thing. You know, he's going to have to
– he's going to be in tough.
And Thorburn's sitting there. You know, he's got 1 year left on his contract. So the whole fourth line basically – So you might be able to find a way for these young kids. Fabry's got to prove himself this year, I believe.
Yeah, that's the wild card. Overall, that's the wild card.
But next year, I think things are looking big time for the Blues. Getting through this year, they're going to have to stay healthy. And like I said, you're going to have to have Fabry stay healthy for the whole year and play like he can. Schwartzy play like he can and stay healthy. You know, he's battled it a little bit. And Steen, and these are my three big ones because I think the other ones are going to come to play. You know, Maroon and the new guys that are coming in, I think it's going to give a new life to this Blue system. Their top four defensemen, they can play with anyone in the business, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
They got a good fifth and sixth guys that are going to come in there, so they're solid there. So you take those three guys and then your goaltender, if he can, Jake's got to play like he can play. And I tell you what.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
I'll argue with anybody.
I knew we were going to get into this Jake Allen discussion.
Yeah, but here's – and I will – everyone – talks about Jake, you know, he went off on this little, he's done it in a couple years in a row. I still, in the last 2 years, I really hope this, and you're going to call me crazy, but I hope the backup goaltender is not a guy that can really compete with Jake.
I know, this is the popular thing right now. This is what's trending, right, is that whenever he's pushed, he doesn't play good.
Yeah, and I don't like, and I don't agree with that, but I think I'll buy into some of this though, Ribs, because last year when it happened and Hutton come up, he played so well that Yo went with him, and he stayed with him. So I'm wondering if that...
As he should have.
I don't have a problem with it, because Jake's got to be stronger mentally than that. He's got to be like Eddie Belfour was my friend, and that would have pissed Eddie Belfour off that this guy was... And it would make Eddie Belfour a better player, which it always did.
Would have raised his level.
Yeah. So that's where Jake's got to get to now. So if he's going to be pushed by someone, I got to get to this next level. Then I got to win my job back, if I get hurt or something, whatever going on. So a lot of this rides on Jake, and I'll stand behind him because I think he – and the reason I stand behind him is because 2 years ago I asked Eddie Belfour when I was talking because he worked with the Blues a long time ago down in the minors with the goalies for a bit, and he likes him. And I'm just going off another goalie, the Hall of Fame goalie.
Well, that's a pretty damn good guy to base your assessment on.
So that's why I stay with it. And so it's on Jake. He's got – I don't know who's going to – this guy's not really going to push him that hard, I don't think, this year. You never know, though.
Here's where I'm at, okay? And we're going to backtrack just a minute or two into our conversation. See, this – I like a lot of what you're saying, but here's where I disagree with you talking about 2 years from now, okay? And the reason I disagree with you is because we have Fabry on a one-year deal. We have Maroon on a one-year deal, right?
Yep.
And we're scrambling through here. Like, if you go down the lineup, you've got a number of guys that are, one-year deal. Like, Patty Maroon, we all talk about how great it is. Come next year, he's a free agent again, unrestricted. Now, we want to believe that come January, February, the Blues have an extension in mind for him.
For sure.
Great. We're hoping that, Robbie Fabry comes back and plays well, but then there's no guarantee he will or this or that and the other. But these guys are in contract years.
Yep.
Right? So I think that if there's a year that they're really going to push, it's going to be this year. Mm-hmm. Because these guys on one-year contracts, you've been there. Yep. They're going to play their asses off. And it's not like and I'm not talking specifically about Maroon or Fabry, but just in general. Ordinarily, that ramps a guy up.
Yeah.
And so I think the year to do it is this year coming up. Now, the future looks bright. You're not wrong with that, with Thomas and Kyrou and Costin and the whole... the cupboard full of things right now that looks bright for sure.
Yeah.
But I like their balance heading into next year. Now, the question I have, though, is in that, what if Jake Allen gets hurt? Knock on wood. Mm-hmm. What if he gets hurt? Now we got to ride out 30, 40 games with Chad Johnson mm-hmm. and Ville Husso.
Yep.
And I'm not saying they're bad goalies.
For sure.
Ville Husso is an all-star in the American Hockey League, which means that, listen, he stops the puck.
Yep.
And Johnson's been in and out of the NHL for a number of years as backup, which means he's played at a high level. He can stop the puck. However, do you really feel great about turning around and hanging your hat on one of those guys
yeah.
for 20, 30 games?
No.
That's tough, right?
Correct.
So you're kind of picking your own poison at that point because you're like, well, I don't necessarily want to bring a guy in who's going to make Jake uncomfortable or, you know, what. But at the flip side of that is,
sure.
what if something does go wrong? What if he has a little spiral mm-hmm. where he's not playing well? Now what? Where's your 2025 start goalie? You don't have him.
No.
So that's where I get cautious.
But and then that's where we go to the mental part of Jake. He's getting there. How many years has he been here now? Five, six?
I think it's five now.
Yeah. So you know he's been in this ball game long enough, and he's wanted this position long enough. They're giving him this position now. It's time for him to, you know.
I agree.
So that he's got to go there. And as we're doing this, so here's the one thing that here's a question I want to ask you. So if I believe Prawn's the first guy that the Army gets here this summer.
He was the first announced signing, correct?
Yeah. No, let me ask you this. If the Army
I know where you're headed with this. I know where you're headed with this.
I'm not
I know.
I think this man, if I took anyone in the National Hockey League and put him in a phone booth and said, here, I need you to stick handle through 50,000 ants that are running on the ice, Prawn would be my guy. And so now, because let's be honest here, he went at Vegas near the end of the season. He started, whether it's if he was injured or not, I don't know that part. But he started sitting in the press box a little bit. And he gets to the playoffs and he sits in the press box a little bit. And so does Army sign him after? What if it went reverse order?
Yeah, I knew you were going to go there. I knew you were going to do that.
You know, that's where that's the question I got to myself. Do you take that $16 million? Because I still believe, of all the things that happened this thing, I wish the Brodziak would have got signed back here. Because I liked him for the big body. He killed penalties. He was strong defensively. He was happy playing on the fourth line. He was a sit there.
But he
filled spots. You know,
it
what I mean?
Appeared to be right. Like here's the thing. So this you've nailed me with a two part question here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
About two different players. We'll address the Brodziak thing first. Brodziak played up in the lineup last year. Had a career year.
Yeah.
So now he believed that he was bigger than a fourth line player.
I understand that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So which is dangerous because sometimes we. What do you say? You price yourself out of the market, right?
Yeah.
And so becoming or staying a Blue probably wasn't in the cards for him because he believed, well, I could play second line.
What did he sign for there when he went to Dino?
I think it was like, I don't even want to guess.
Yeah, okay.
It's in and around $1 million, okay? So whether it's 800 or 1.1, I'm somewhere in there. I don't remember the numbers. They're fair numbers.
Yep.
for the career year.
So you're more worried about him because the money wasn't that big of a deal, obviously for the million. But you're more worried about the mentality part coming back.
The mentality.
Back.
Where does he think he fits?
Where does
in?
He think? Yeah, his own. Yeah.
And so
his ego. Yeah.
That can be dangerous
for sure.
Sometimes. He excelled in a role where he played above and beyond what he was supposed to, and you know as well as I do, that's easy to do.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to prove people wrong than to be that guy who, you know, you think you're better than you are.
He was a top three Blue last year. Like
he was.
You got to put him there. That's where he got to.
I love the player.
Yeah.
I do. I thought he had a great year.
But I understand where you're going.
After the season ended, I thought, I don't think he's going to sign here because his agent, never mind him, because that makes it personal. His agent is going to believe he's worth more than he is.
Yeah.
And so, and he wanted to go back. I guess he's from Edmonton, that area.
But the reason why I wanted him, the reason that I would want him on this team, you just signed Patty, and Patty's a big boy. If you want to be realistic here, and if no one gets hurt, Thorburn ain't going to see the ice that much, I don't think. And that's another big boy. And it's not, I don't want him there for fight. That's not what I'm talking about. Like, because the Ryan Reeves, look like what he's done. Obviously, he paid something because he got a pretty good contract out of this. You talked about the Wilson kid in Washington.
But those guys have had to add to their game, right? They're
right.
No longer one-dimensional.
No, but the Blues aren't that big. They're not that big. They're tons of skill, but we're not that. And I know the game's changed.
Yeah.
But still, you watch the playoffs as well as I did. You know, there's body contact going on.
People forget how big Alexander Ovechkin is, too.
For sure.
He's a monster.
And he could be a mean son of a bitch.
He is, right?
He wants to be.
And so I see where you're headed. Yeah. There's a lot of big bodies that just because they're skilled doesn't mean they're not big.
For sure.
So I get it. Look, I thought the Brodziak thing, like I said, was
okay, go to the prawn part, though.
I'm going to go to the prawn right now. I think, and I like David Perron.
Yeah.
Okay? I like him as a person. I know him. I think he's a good guy. He's skilled beyond belief. I think he can help a power play here in St. Louis. Now, I have to be honest because I try to be an honest person.
Mm-hmm.
If it was in reverse, I don't think that deal happens.
That's what I was thinking.
I don't think. Not for 4 years.
Not for four, yeah. Not for four.
I think for three, it happens. You know, but here's the thing again. It's like the market basically said, this is what David Perron's worth.
Mm-hmm.
If you take his 60 points, his ice time, all the things that you talk about, right, and you place him in the order of the unrestricted free agents, guess what? He slots right in there at that money. Now, the term... I don't know how that went down. And you know what? I'm not going to sit here and second-guess Doug Armstrong because look at what he's done. He's done a great job this offseason. And at the time, he probably felt like we needed to solidify a guy who can get us close to, you know, a point a game.
Mm-hmm. The signing, which I'm not a fan of, the signing could turn around and you could just spit in my face if a top dog, gets hurt. Like... For him and Steen to be if him and Steen are running on the top two, if one of them's got to sort of depart.
I see them both on the third line.
Yeah.
But
that's where I was going, though. If a top player gets hurt, Perron's going to be, it's going to be a,
well, he has the ability.
Army's going to look like a brain surgeon here. He said, we got him and he fit in.
You know, in defense of, I don't say in defense because he doesn't really need any defending.
No.
But Doug Armstrong and the NHL itself, if you're looking around the league at the top teams, the way they're signing players, Toronto and all these teams, right? They're no longer really looking at their lineup and going first line, second line, third line.
Yeah.
They're talking about three lines. And then you have your fourth line, which is now your checking line.
Yeah.
So it's like your third line back in the day.
Back in the day.
So when you look at the Blues lineup now, adding a guy like Perron, you know, now you're creating balance. You really are.
Yeah.
Now, will a young kid like Thomas outplay him? Will a Kyrou outplay him? Will a Costin outplay Steen? Will a Costin outplay Fabry? Who knows, right?
Who knows, correct.
So that's why we go right back to the beginning of our conversation today is when you look at the board down in the Blues dressing room and you're the coach and the GM, you're like, you know what? There is a ton of healthy competition available to us right now. And we better damn well get the best out of each and every player. Or guess what? My decision is going to be easy.
I totally agree with exactly what you said. At the start of the year, putting the pieces in the right spot is going to be challenging for him.
100%.
But you know as well as I know that a one-way and a two-way contract to speak volumes when we got to put that roster together.
I think it does, but I don't know if it necessarily does if you have a blue-chip prospect like a Thompson, a Kyrou, a Costin. Let's just use those three guys, right?
Yeah.
And if they're actually outplaying your NHL guy, then they can actually get relevant minutes.
Because they're under $1 million, like, so you still add that.
So it helps your cap situation.
Just a roster
spot. Right? So if you say, okay, well, player X is eating up couple million.
Yeah.
He's being outplayed by player Z who's making 700 or 800,000. Guess what? Now I can buy some cap space.
Yeah.
And now I can put this kid in with relevant minutes. So I understand what you're saying. You're right. The two-way contract
makes it easy.
It makes it easy in a lot of situations unless that player, the young player or the two-way player, legitimately outplays the one-way contract guy. And if that's the case, it's a win-win for the Blues again.
It is.
It means it's a great problem to have.
But this year, though, they can afford to get the kid down and get him number one line minutes down in San Antonio this year, where last year they didn't know if the kid was going to be getting.
Right. The dynamic is completely different.
It's a totally different animal.
Yeah, which is great. And you know what? It does kind of back up your thoughts of the next couple years.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to your position here.
Which one?
Talk a little bit about your position you played.
I know, not the bench warmer spot, the defenseman.
I was going to say left press box.
Because I got the bench. I know that gig already. Yeah. So, no, let's. What do you think, Mr. Edmondson? What do you think we're going to do here?
Well, this is interesting because even though the Blues have put themselves in a good spot cap-wise, it's not the best, right? Because even though the Maroon deal is cap-friendly, it still puts them in a bit of a pickle, in my opinion, because if you look at Joel Edmondson's numbers, the ice time that he plays, the way he plays, where he slots in, he played top two at times with Petro, like top four for sure.
Yeah.
He's looking at, like, he should get the same contract as Parayko.
For
or
sure.
Darn close.
Close.
And that's going to bump them right up to the cap, which is going to mean somebody's got to go.
Yeah.
So I think they, well, it's no secret they have to get the deal done.
Yeah, you have to have him back.
And I think they have to do it before arbitration.
Yeah.
Because if they go to arbitration.
You don't know what you're getting.
Well, and you bring up comparables, right?
You might get Brendan Shanahan for Scotty Stevens.
Well, you might end up with a big problem. You might end up where the arbitration goes, well, he's worth a two-year deal at $5 million a year.
Exactly.
And then you're like, well, wait, what?
Yeah.
Now I got to get rid of two players.
For sure.
So the Blues, it's in their best interest, in my opinion, to get a deal hammered out long term before this arbitration thing happens on, what, the 25th or the 26th or something like that?
25th, I think they're going in.
So that's my opinion, is they have to get this deal done. I think he's worth close to $4 million a year. Can they structure it to where his average, his AAV, for the popular people out there?
For sure.
If they can structure it to where that comes in to where this year it works out in their favor, where they're not over the cap,
yep,
that would be a bonus. I don't know. It'll all depend, you know, and this is a tough spot because it puts the player in a tough spot because now people look at it and say, well, if he really cared about the team,
yeah,
he'd take less money. And here we are, right? We're promoting and talking about how Pat Maroon did it.
Yeah.
Now, he had several reasons for doing it that way, but we're promoting what a great move that is by the player. But we're also talking about Joel Edmondson, where this is like his home run contract almost. He
exactly.
could hit a 6-7 year deal here
yep.
that sets him up for life.
Yep.
So he's got to be very cautious, and the fans have to be understanding of this process. It's a business right now.
Patty Maroon and him, they're not even on the same wavelength. This continent, because Patty Maroon's older.
I know, but he's people will home. Compare it.
That's what I mean.
They will. They'll say, well, Pat Maroon, yeah. who's twice the player, or this, or that, no. and the other, he took, which he did.
Yeah.
Okay, and we love him for it.
Yeah.
We've already talked about that. However, Joel Edmondson's in a different position.
You got to get your money when you can.
He's got to get his money.
And that's not even selfish. That's just he's put the time in. And
well, other players are getting it.
Yeah,
why shouldn't he?
Exactly. And I'm pretty sure if in all fair and love and war, he wants to come back to St. Louis. But
well, of course he does.
Yes. So he wants – but that number's got to be there. And, you know, he's – every other – 100% of every other player in the National Hockey League, 100% of the players in the old time, you know, that, you got to get your money when you got to get it.
Well, because you never know.
You don't know what's going to happen to you.
That's right. And so, but this is going to be a difficult process for some fans to wrap their brains around because they're going to say, well, look at the team we have. What, you know, why wouldn't he just take this much and keep us under the cap so we keep everybody? We don't have to lose anybody. And maybe that's possible.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I think the world here in St. Louis has to be ready for the fact that somebody may have to go to fit Joel Edmondson on the roster. And in my opinion, that's worth it.
Yeah. I tell you what, this the you know, you get on Twitter and you the people here, they're making lines up and everything and they got the parade going already and I don't want to come out and be the jackass out there and say put the brakes on this here for a second, but you know, you got to be excited. I'm of course you're excited of what Armstrong pulled through here together. I still, and we had this conversation 20 minutes ago, I still there's a Toronto team out there that has done a hell of a lot, and their lineup is really strong. The defense is questionable. Their goaltending is questionable. Tampa Bay seems to be the strong man in this ball game right now.
Well, they may not be done either.
And they may not be
they're
done.
They're still kind of sort of in on the Carlson thing.
Correct. And so where that guy shows up at. But the Blues have got themselves in a good, you know, it's not like they're, at least they're not in the bottom 10. We're not talking about missing the playoffs. And they're going to come back and we're thinking, well, they're a bottom 10 team. No. We're still talking. I think they're in the top 10. They're hovering around that line, so they've got better this summer. Which so Armstrong, you got to give him kudos for that. Whatever you know, I was pissed at him when this thing started. When I see Mr. Perron come off the table first, I'm going, holy shit, what's going on here? And then nothing's really happened, and all of a sudden, boom, 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 Now you got a total different outlook, and you could see that on Twitter. The pendulum was going. Everyone was pretty well the devil side over here. They're hating. And all of a sudden, Armstrong's wearing a halo over here.
Yeah, you know what I mean? No, I know. There's highs and lows, and certainly this offseason has presented that to us with question marks at the start of it, and now everybody's ordering the rings, right?
Yeah, so correct.
The whole Blues Nation has to be very cautious here. Yeah. Very cautious.
They got to be. I'll tell you what, though. I've lived in St. Louis here for 19 years, and just in the last 4 or 5 years, I really got back into seeing what's going on. But they're coming in the right direction here. So, and I think their future looks really bright, especially with these signings down the middle. That's just enormous. And he's done a good job here. And I still don't know if he's done. I think there's one more move that's going to pop off this table yet. I think.
Well,
not. I'm not necessarily saying there's going to be a big move coming, a huge player like a Carlson. I'm not doing that.
No, I know.
I'm just saying there's got to be something else tweaked here, because I think you got too many chefs in the kitchen right now, and I think one needs to leave the premises, possibly.
Well, and I think, just like we talked about, I think that may take care of itself, mm-hmm. right? Depending on what happens with Mr. Edmondson,
yeah,
that may have to regulate itself. And if that's the case, then I'm sure he'll explore a variety of options,
yeah.
Which may not be easy, because then teams know, quite honestly, they know that it's like an injured prey, right? Like the Predator already knows he's injured, right? So they know the Blues are going to have to unload something and look for some favors. So it's interesting. It would be interesting to be in on those conversations, those phone calls, to hear how they try to manufacture some of these deals. And we hear about the Lightning, and they're trying to drag in a third team.
For sure.
To eat up some cap space here or get rid of a player here, and they got two or three teams now. That seems to be the way it's trending, to where that's how it goes to get deals done. And we go right back to the Hoffman deal for Ottawa. Ottawa trades him to San Jose. San Jose deals him to Florida and gets the picks and all. And I guarantee Pierre Dorion probably had no idea that Hoffman was going to end up in Florida by the end of the day. But that's the way some of these things get structured now in order to complete them.
I'm surprised Melnyk didn't keep him in Ottawa, though, and they'd have that one of them housewife series, and you could run that through there. Wouldn't that be something?
He'd make some money on it.
Exactly.
God, the stuff I'm hearing around there. And then did you hear, it's a horrible story, and it really hasn't gotten much traction down here anyways, but I stay in touch with things back home. And did you hear that story about Cody Ceci and his girlfriend?
Yeah, yes, I did. Yes, I did. I did hear that.
So as the story goes, he had a dinner, a get-together. Mm-hmm. And
is he still with the one?
Yeah, he's still with the girl.
Yeah.
And they had teammates over and their girlfriends, and they had the fire was going down low or something, and Cody Ceci's fiance decided to take some lighter fluid or whatever, the barbecue fluid, spray it on, and it worked its way back up the tube or up the stream. And boom, blew up, and some girl's burned half her body now. It's a crazy story. I mean, I'm giving you the Cole's notes of it here, the quick story. But Google it, Cody Ceci, fiance, Cody Ceci, girl on fire. I don't know what you'd punch in there. But once again, it's just another one. It's a horrible story.
For sure.
But two, it's just adding to, unfortunately, that disaster that's going on in Ottawa.
The National Enquirer is invading Ottawa.
Yeah, and then Pierre Dorion is his first real gig is a GM.
Yeah, I'll be honest, and I don't. This is just me looking from the outside. Your brother is up there, and he's closer to the situation than you are. But I think the owner needs to sort of probably vacate the area and have someone else come in there and buy that team. And I think you got Tkachuk's going there. You got some young kids that are sitting in that ball game that you can build
Logan
off of. Logan Brown sitting there. You got some young kids. You got a future building there. But I think I've just heard stories back then. When our Mark Reeds was my coach, and then I heard stories of when his passing died and some of the shit that went on. And this guy don't need to be an owner of a shoelace place. He's a terrible. I don't believe in the man from what I heard. So
wow, when you have multiple sources telling you the same story, and those sources have nothing to do with each other, then you have to start thinking that this is probably a true story.
Yes.
That maybe this guy's not the best fit to be owner of a pro sports team.
In Ottawa, it's the capital of Canada, so they love their hockey there. So there's the NHL Mr. Ballsy there, Bettman, he could get off his ass here, maybe, and just say, maybe, you know, you're not doing things right here. We got a product.
He may be in there. He may be involved. And here's the thing is that people, maybe our listeners don't know what's going on totally, but there's a whole project that's trying to be done downtown Ottawa. And for those who don't know, the current rink situation is the Senators building is out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. It would be like taking Scott Trader, the Enterprise Center now, and moving it out to, like, Warrington. Like
a UFO going up in like, Enterprise.
Yeah. Let's move it up to Warrington, right? And then everybody's going to try and battle their way out there on a two-lane highway to try and get to the big game.
Captain Kirk and Spock.
It doesn't work, right? And so the project that they've got going on for downtown, which is this massive, unbelievable complex, well, the people who are involved in that now, somehow, some way, they don't get along with the owner, Melnick. Yeah. So now that project is possibly dying, which means it's just going to hemorrhage money from the Senators who are out in the middle of nowhere again, and it's just, it's not a good scene all around.
But you like the stories we're talking about there, so the shit that's going on in Ottawa, but so you look at the NFL on the outside and just look at the shit that's going on, and as a
but the NFL brand has way more
but I'm just saying, but as a professional athlete even, or a fan watching that, and you got to say at some point in time, what the fuck is going on out there? Like, are you guys even human beings when you're doing this shit? So, you know, and that's why I said was, Mr. Bettman, you need to be in the process here, because the NHL's not known for, you know, once in a blue moon, you got a guy fall off the plantation here, but you don't do that nonsense. You know what I mean? It's pretty loyal people that are playing the game of hockey, so you don't want to get down that road.
Okay, so now you brought up Gary Bettman.
Oh, boy.
I have to hear how you feel about his induction into the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Son of a bitch. you know what? If you play the game and you do, you got friends. But Jeremy Roenick is, he's a good friend of mine. When we played, I hung out with JR quite a bit. I know that you've gone that way with Keith Tkachuk.
Yeah.
You know, you got these guys.
Both of those guys, by the way, should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. And so you got that. And now I got a guy that's locked us out. I played the damn game. He was going to come in and put the big boom down and, you know, take money off the table. But how can you not let your – it's not me going – I'm not asking for me to go in the Hall of Fame, but a guy that deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Now, they're in different categories, right?
Yeah,
because there's the player category, and they're putting – Gary Bettman is entering in the builders category.
Jesus.
So, now, listen, okay? Here's where it gets conflicting for me. Internally, is yes, I was a part of two lockouts that happened with Mr. Bettman, and it cost.
So was I. I was two.
Cost me a lot of money.
Yeah,
a lot of opportunity.
First one cost me a lot of money.
A lot of everything, right? Mm-hmm. But the game wasn't. I shouldn't say the game. The game, the product, the brand wasn't healthy.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. And we love it, and we're probably going to sit here and say, oh, bullshit, it was an unbelievable game. Okay. But revenue-wise and worldwide, the optics of our league and all that stuff, it wasn't the sponsorship. None of that was where it needed to be. Does the lockout, does it mean that it helped it? I don't know, okay? Because it sits poorly with me, too, for obvious reasons. But since Gary Bettman has taken over, the revenues of the league, the sponsorship, the game, the growth of the game in general has gone, it doubled, if not tripled. So now how does that, like, where does that put you thinking about that?
But this is, so, which
because I'm going to be that guy. I'll be that guy right
now. Where you're going with it, though, so Gary Bettman went out and got sponsorships out the ass, and he had people, that's where he went to. So, but you go to the product on the ice, and if you go... If you watch the game back when I played it and you played it, I was even farther back than you. But the fan, they pushed the true fan from the prime seats. They pushed them to the top of the ladder board or out of the rink.
Yeah.
And they brought the sponsorship in to run it. So with Gary Bettman, what he did, now did it get players more money? And of course it did. All that shit went through it. So if you're looking at it itself, but you got to look. Because if the fan ain't there, you don't got a sport. You're not even on the table. And we had fans back then. We didn't have the revenue coming in, but we had fans back. When you talk about fans, we didn't have the ones eating shrimp cocktail on that. We had the ones drinking beer and eating bratwurst. That was the fan that I played for. And I think that's what – I think that's where the game – the whole game transformed over to that other part, Rivs, because – The fan now, they're after the big lights. And back then, you know, they went for the love of the game. They went for the fights. They had a different mentality that they were going to the hockey game for.
Certainly.
And am I against people making money? Of course I'm not. He you know, he's gone there. But with the fans, when you see Gary Bettman come out to the Stanley Cup, when they handed out the Stanley Cup, and when he goes up on the NHL awards, and he's got to beg for him to be quiet at the draft, and
they're
like
booing
that.
Him all the time.
Is that the fan that watched me play, or like where is that some of the fans that are watching the current game play?
Yeah. You know, well, I think that's a mix, right? I think that's a mix of people. Just we're supposed to boo
just because he looks like who's that comedian on there? That Mr. No, what's his name?
Pee Wee Herman?
No. he's a guy from England over there. I forget his name. But
Mr. Bean. Yeah.
is that because he looks that way and they're booing him for that? If you're an owner, if you're big sponsors and that, you love the man. That of course you did. The players that are making big money now, he's part of the reason, but you still had to sell something. You need a product to sell.
Yeah.
And I think the product was you had the Halls, the Gretzky. The product was always there. You know, you had players that were phenomenal, like some of the best you'll ever see in this game, if not the best. You know, when you go back to Bobby Orr and, you know, Sid and these guys aren't even cracking the top six, seven guys when you're talking about all time.
When you're looking at the athletes, too, financially across the board, hockey's not even in the mix.
No. So, you know, has he done good for it? Of course he has. But the Hall of Fame, and I even argue this with some of the people. Like, when I go to the Hall of Fame now, it's like – and I watch it on football too, and you know, because I'm a fan of those. When I watch it, sometimes they're letting in people just to open the door now and letting people in. They got to put someone in. Back in the day, they wasn't there, you didn't get in.
No, I know.
You know, and there's some guys I've always, and I've said it on here before, and where JR and Walt, where they get into trouble is they never won a championship.
No,
I'll guarantee you, if one of them has a ring on their finger, they're already in the Hall of Fame. Because Cam Neely, Cam goes there, you know, and that's. But he didn't get a ring on his finger.
Oh, Eric Lindros, same thing.
You know, so
there's arguments to be made across the board.
But those are the type of players.
I think the players, that debate will go on forever.
Yeah.
But when we isolate Builder, right?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. And here's where I'm going to – this is my final comment on this. I do think he belongs in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Not right now.
Yeah, not right now.
Not right now. Not while he's active.
Not while he's active.
Okay, because his tenure's not over.
Yeah.
He may do great things from here on out, which will solidify it.
Yeah.
Or he may do something that is crazy and ruins the sport.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's enshrined in the Hall of Fame before you know the conclusion of the story.
Did he have to be put in the Hall of Fame so his ego could get even bigger? Because he couldn't wait till he got in the goddamn ground and they put him in, or he had to be there?
Look, I don't know, right?
Jesus.
But I disagree 100% that he should go in now.
Yeah, I disagree on that.
Now, if his track record stays the same from here till the end of his tenure, I do believe he belongs there just because he's grown the game more than any other person ever has for the NHL. We can argue about it for weeks and months.
Yep.
The revenues, the sponsorship, the visibility, the TV deals, all of those speak volumes of what he's been able to do.
Mm-hmm.
So has he lost the true fan? Probably.
Yeah.
Has he changed some things that'll never get the true fan back? Has he priced the game out of certain people's fingertips? 100%.
Yeah.
But overall, when you're looking at the pie chart and you see the revenues that are in as opposed to what they used to be, he's gone far and beyond anybody else what they've been able to do.
But I'll always come back to, so if you were, let's take a hockey player for example, So Gary Bettman is sitting there, but Gary Bettman's only getting to that point because of all these NHL owners that are sitting behind him. Because really, you know, when you
he's their guy, 100%.
When you look at it, Gary Bettman's out there getting his ass handed to him. But these guys back here that own these teams, they're making the call. This guy might be suggesting something, but I'll guarantee you the 31 teams or whatever, they're the ones making the call. So they're the ones.
But he's the one that has to sell it to the owners, right? He's got to tell them, this lockout you're going to have, this is going to help you.
Yeah.
Trust me. You need to trust me.
For sure.
That'd be really hard, especially some of the old school owners. Like, I know Mike Ilitch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he wasn't fond of lockout. He wasn't a guy that was waving the pom-pom saying, yeah, let's lock the players out. No, he was like, I love the players. Mm-hmm. I'm doing okay. Maybe these owners should be smarter.
Yeah.
You know, but Gary Bettman was a guy who had to sell the ideas to the ownership group. He had to sell the ideas to sponsorship, all that.
But you, so when you go through that process, and I'll get off it here in a second. But my last thing on him is, you know, you look around the National Hockey League, and he's still got two or three, maybe four franchises out there that are playing that are in trouble.
They're struggling.
You know, they're struggling. And yeah. You know,
well, Ottawa, we just talked about. That's why it segued into this, right?
But do you get the at some point in time is your ego too big to get out of it and maybe go to a different market? Because I think, and I'll always say this because I played there, it was Quebec City. I think you take one of these teams, and then maybe they don't want to get into Canada, into that process again, but, you know, the fan support's going to be now is the media and all the...
Well, I think the problem with the Quebec idea right now is the strength of the Canadian dollar, right?
For sure.
It's not where it should be or could be. And when we put the franchise back in Winnipeg, it was a bit of a different financial time. Things were better. The dollar was closer to the U.S. dollar. And I hate bringing up the whole business side of the game, but it is, right? Yeah, because your sponsorships, your TV deals, your fans, your payroll, all that stuff. When the Canadian dollar, when you've got to bring in two Canadian dollars for every U.S. dollar you're spending, that's a tough deal.
But when where I'm going is, though, so let's take Carolina, for example. And I know they got an owner or something, but if they're losing so much money and they're threatening to do this, and they need to be, or Arizona. Let's go to Arizona because I know the league's bailed them out a few times. Where's that money coming from?
Yeah,
you know, that's
each team has a line of credit of like $150 million with the NHL, and I don't know the specifics, and I shouldn't talk out of my ass here, but I do know that they have those systems in place for teams that run into a speed bump.
But where does that money come from?
Well, it comes from all the other owners.
Exactly. So if they're sitting there, if I'm an owner and I'm looking, and I know Arizona's a beautiful place and everything, and maybe if the
I'm not as worried about Arizona right now,
no,
as I am about Carolina and Ottawa.
Yeah, but okay, so go to Carolina
or Florida.
So if my team's traveling and I'm an owner and I know I'm putting this money in to bail a team out and I'm going into Carolina to watch my team play them that night and there's 3,000 fans in the crowd. I probably got to say to myself, okay, well, this is never going to get fucking better.
Yeah.
When can we get smart here and get them? At least I can get them to Quebec. And I'm just saying Quebec.
No,
I'm not saying that's the final
destination.
Well, it's a
great thing. It's a great team to use because they're ready to go right now.
Yeah.
If you took a team tonight and put it there tomorrow, they're ready.
And I got 18,000 fans that I know that I can probably after what they've gone through.
And I have sponsorship deals, and I have the Quebec TV deal. I have everything ready to go.
Yeah. And then there's a rivalry sitting right there that we go back to the Montreal rivalry, so it's all ready to sit there. And I'd be sitting there going, well, shit. If I'm an owner, I'm going, well, fuck.
You know who screwed that up though? Karmanos.
Oh, did he?
Yep, because he put in the sale of that team that under no circumstances could the new owner move that team.
Yeah.
So now that doesn't, you know. So the new guy who's in there, Dundon, he's a little bit of a weird bird himself.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
You know, we could go into an hour-long show over some of the stuff he's doing here recently. But I think that's going to hemorrhage even too much for him. And then he'll sell it, and then that new owner can relocate it.
And, I see Roddy's up there coaching him, and
poor Roddy.
Yeah, he's going to be in a tough spot there. How are you going to attract players to that nonsense? Because you're like Steve Smith. Just walked out of there. He's assistant coach. Francis. You know, he apparently said no, I ain't going to do it. They can't find a GM for the bloody money they want. You know, and
well, when you have a guy who owns a team, okay, and I'm not going to go too far into some of these things, but when you have a guy who says, hey, by the way, scouts, we're not paying for you to travel, and we're not paying your cell phone bills. Reason being is because they have excellent coverage on TV now.
Yeah.
You can scout watching TV. Never heard of something so silly in my life, right? So, but that's where we're at with this. He's like the coverage and the HD TV. He's selling it as like, this is great.
Okay, so then rewind a little bit. So the Mr. Bean there, why doesn't Mr. Bean make a phone call to him and say, hey, this is the product I've sold. Oh, my God, this is why I'm going into the Hall of Fame.
They do have these conversations.
Yeah.
They don't become public for obvious reasons because they don't need knuckleheads like you and I and every other guy in Toronto and Montreal just spitting all over our mic talking about it, right? So, but these conversations, they have to happen. I know they do happen.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, look, before we leave... Because I know we're running on time here, but before we leave, I have to talk to you about something. I wish Cromer was here because I'd love to get him all riled up and watch his head blow up. But World Cup soccer, okay? Now, let me set the stage.
Let me set the stage.
I'm not going to ask you about teams or anything like that. You don't even have to know about what's going on for where I'm headed. The sport of soccer, those guys are impressive as far as their athletic ability, their endurance, the condition they're in, all of these things. It's incredible. The fan support that they get is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
a housefly scrapes up against them, and they go down like they've been hit with an elephant gun. And then Nanga gets, well, wait, there's more. Lays on the field for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
The trainer comes out with the freezing spray there. Basically, it's just like a can of Febreze. Throws it on the guy's leg, through a sock, through a shin guard, through everything that he's got. Bounces up, and he's back in the play.
Yeah.
How does that sit with you?
Well, here,
and does that inspire you to watch soccer?
No, it doesn't. You know what? When I was young, when I was actually living in Lucky Lake, I think it was in Montreal. Did Montreal host the World Cup at one time?
Probably.
I wonder if they did.
They probably did.
I wonder if
they
did.
I don't remember. That's probably black and white before my time.
We only had two channels in Lucky Lake, so I was. But I was watching it. It was a World Cup, and it was actually when Maradona was playing, because he scored all those goals in there.
Pretty good player.
Yeah. But I was so I'm watching, and here's my question, because I know the United States has got a soccer league now. I know a lot of European players here, but there's got to be a bunch of Americans playing in there too.
There is.
Do the Americans drop like this too when they're playing the game of soccer?
I don't know. I don't watch enough.
Because I know that when I'm watching the World Cup and they start to get the highlights, or if you even tune into a game, because one's going down every 5 minutes, so you know what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
But those are European players and all that stuff going on over there. I'm wondering if the American game was going on. Do these guys drop like that?
I don't know. I'd have to watch it more often. But yeah. You know what? I guess what grinds my gears is I've played all over the world now in hockey. Not all over the world, but in Europe and Russia and all these places, right?
Yep.
Those Russians are hardcore.
Well, for sure they are.
I'll tell you that much. They're hardcore. Yep. You could shoot one with a gun and he'll keep walking towards you. I'm not kidding. These people are hardcore. Yet. You know, I slide on the ground, miss his foot, miss everything, and the guy drops for 5 minutes like he's been shot. Like, that's not computing for me.
No.
I don't get it. And this Neymar guy who plays for Brazil, you know, you're watching Twitter things and YouTube, people are creating videos where there's 20 kids on the field dribbling a soccer ball, and the coach blows the whistle and goes, "Do the Neymar!" And they all drop on the ground and start rolling around. Like, something's wrong here, right?
Yeah, that's terrible.
I just couldn't imagine, you know, Mike Valiquette or Steve Valiquette, the goalie for the Rangers, told a story about how somebody stepped on his toe and it was barely hanging on, and he went out and played. And you and I could tell stories for hours about guys who played through crazy stuff. And we're into these, without getting into the debate, we got the concussion lawsuit going on where guys are playing through brain injuries.
Yep.
And pretending like there's nothing going on. So can you imagine?
And you know what? The thing that I really relate to soccer, and I'm not that I'm being ignorant to the game and not watch. I haven't watched hardly any of this World Cup. I'm on the go all the time. But where I did get to that part, these kids that got caught in the cave here, that was their whole thing. They wanted to come out, and these players were coming out, and they wanted to come over there. But those guys just went through a heroism thing where they were, you know, their life was on the line, and they got to swim out of here somehow. And the soccer players are saying they come on over there. Could you imagine those kids coming out there and seeing one of these buggers drop in front of them? And say,
yeah, I just spent 2 weeks in a cave, and you just went down because the wind changed directions. Like,
thank God you weren't swimming out with me when I needed out of the cave, buddy.
Thank God I wasn't relying on you. I totally get. Now, here's where I respect soccer, before we end this whole debate, is you go back to the Russians. I'm going to go back there again because before Viktor Tikhonov, and I'm going to be Cliff Clavin here right now.
Yeah,
that's
quite an impact on your life because you talk about it quite a bit.
Well, I got to learn more about it, right? So I'm like Cliff Clavin. Hey, let me tell you a story here there, Normie.
Why do I got to be Normie? Can I be Ted?
I didn't even think about that. See, that's just subliminal. I had it in my mind already. Sorry, Norm. But they had a guy, Tarasov, right, who was their coach before Tikhonov, and he talked about using the sport of soccer, how they don't give up the ball, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, we don't need to give up the puck. Why would we, like, North Americans love to shoot it in and go get it. He's like, why would we give it up? And now it's funny because, long story short, the game has come full circle. We talk about possession. But this Tarasov guy had an impact on Russian hockey players, and where I'm headed is the Fab Five there, the Russian Five in Detroit, when they went there, the Fedosov, Konstantinov, Larionov, all those guys, Kozlov, they changed the game when they went there. And they said the same thing. And I tell the story all the time about how Holly yelled at me, we don't dump the puck in Detroit, right? Well, the reason they don't dump the puck is because these Russians changed it.
Yeah.
And they would go up one side, don't like what they see, they kick it back to the D, kick it back to the goalie, kick it back to the other D, and go up the other side. And it's when I watch soccer, I see a lot of this stuff happening where they're like, ah, they don't give just boot the ball around for without sure. some kind of purpose. So yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say is I respect some of the strategy and the athleticism and the process that go into the game. Where they lose me is when they roll on the ground every 5 minutes and it's, you know, life-threatening, yet they're back up 2 seconds later playing. So
you see that? I'll get out this one thing, but that's probably why I don't watch soccer a lot, because when you're playing that mentality, which is, I get it, but you're playing it on a huge field, it takes so long for the ball to come back to the goal.
Yeah.
Now he's got to bring it all the way back up here. You're like, you're almost going to went to, you know, had to sleep here and come back, and the same shit's going there. Hockey, it's a little different because you're playing on a smaller surface and it's faster. But,
yeah.
No, I get what you're saying.
Well, I'll tell you what. I respect the game, but what I really wish, and we'll get into this debate another day when we get a few more guys on the panel.
Is Cromer playing soccer right now?
No, it's because he goes down like that all exactly. the time, right? That's what I'm talking about. He goes down like a couple of wine coolers. He's pulling a Neymar over in the corner. But what I was going to finish with is, if Gary Bettman, I'm going to touch on all this crap right now. I'm going to pull it all together. This is going to be some good shit. If Gary Bettman can take the NHL product and evolve it and turn it into what soccer and the World Cup has done for fandom mm-hmm. across the world, globally.
Yeah.
Then that son of a bitch has my vote for the Hall of
yeah,
Fame.
Yeah, for sure.
And on that note, I'm going to end it. So Gary Bettman, impress the shit out of me and grow this thing into worldwide like the World Cup is. Folks, we'll talk to you next week. Hopefully we got a big guest coming on. We're working on it right now. And we'll have some fun with that. But till next time here, NHL Blues Podcast.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.